Madison. Oh, it's so good.
Back post, and Payne gives Mark Madison the 1-0 lead. Enjoy this moment, Stephen Payne.
The Pink Men don't quit.
What is up, Flock and friends? It is I, your host, Rob Chappell, with another edition of Talkin' Flock, your full Mingo podcast. With me, as always, Alex Alvarado. How you doing?
Great. Happy to be here.
Much better mood this week. I want to thank everybody for your patience. We took a couple weeks off there first week because the Mingos didn't have a game, so we just sort of let ourselves have that week off. And then this past week, we were going to record a response to the to that Lexington match, which we'll get to. And then there was like a whole thing in Mount Horeb that you're all aware of. And that threw me off for the whole week. And at the game Saturday night, despite having taken those 2 weeks off and you haven't heard from us in 2 weeks, just got a ton of love from everybody. And I just want to let you all know that I really just deeply appreciate that. And it's good to be back among friends. Couple pieces of team news and league news I want to mention real quick. The team news is it is Mental Health Awareness Month in the month of May. And the club has put out a pregame jersey, like a warm-up jersey, to honor that occasion. It's really nice looking. It's a really nice green. It's white with a green trim. It's really nice. But it's the slogan for Mental Health Awareness Month for the club is "Keep Moving Forward." And it has that written backward on the front of the shirt so that you can see it in the mirror and read it and be encouraged. And not only that, but the captain's armband this month will have that same message on it. So those are available at Flamboyant's team store right now. A couple of things on the league side. We learned since we last talked to you, this is almost 2 weeks ago now, but we haven't talked about it since then. But there's apparently going to be a new team in New York next year in Westchester County, which is like north and east of New York City. So next year we'll have two New York away days, one to Brooklyn, one to Westchester, and there'll be a New York Derby match, which will be really cool to see. That'll be fun. Interestingly, the league has not announced that, but the club, like a local newspaper there, wrote a whole story about it. They're building a stadium, or they have a stadium, and they're improving the stadium, and they're going to launch a USL League One team in Westchester County. The other expansion news is the Portland, Maine club that has had a lot of excitement around it over the last couple of years, and is going to begin play also next year. is going to be known as the Hearts of Pine, and they have a crest that it looks a little more like a state flag than a football crest. Honestly, everybody loves it. Like everybody up there, just absolutely is going bonkers over this crest. It is asymmetrical and is sort of artistic, and I don't love it as much as everybody else does, but I get it. Like it's interesting in that it's unconventional. I don't know. What do you think, Alex? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I'm indifferent. I think that there's a lot of crests out right now, and it's difficult to create something. And I don't know. I'm at the end of the day, I'm not really sure. Forward's got a good one, so that's what I.
Well, Forward's at a very high standard.
Yeah.
And it's also nice to see something that's not like Portland FC or Portland United or, you know, whatever. anyway, so both Portland teams in the United States are tree themed.
That's interesting.
Which is interesting. I didn't even think about that until just now. the last thing I'll mention, and we'll get to our Jägermeister Cup game.
Well, hold on. All three. Because the Portland Thorns, too, right?
Oh, that's true.
Well, thorns are more
plant, but they're all botanical in some way.
Yeah,
love it. A little later we'll get to the Jägermeister Cup standings and all that. But I just want to mention. I don't know, did you watch any of the other Jäger games last weekend?
No.
The idea, I think a lot of people were a little disappointed that there weren't a ton of goals because. That whole thing with the fourth team that makes the semis is the team that scores the most goals in those 10 games. Not goal differential, just how many goals you scored. So everybody thought this is going to be the wild, crazy offense, and it just wasn't. It was four games ended 1-1, and then our game was 1-0, And the other game was, I think, also 1-0. But if you think that the first game of a cup of 10 is going to be, you know, a whole bunch of goals like that, it's just the managers here just want to win their group, right? Nobody's aiming for fourth place yet.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. So it'll probably start ramping up maybe in like 3-4 games.
Yeah. When the groups start to take shape a little bit and people start aiming for that fourth spot, then you'll start to see the goals come. Mm-hmm. But they were good games, and it was the penalty shootouts were actually pretty fun too. But we'll talk more about those. But let's get to our Jägermeister Cup game, which we will touch on briefly because it was ugly and terrible and embarrassing. I said on Twitter that we emphasize that the club does not sponsor this podcast. We're independent, and we will call it when it's bad, and that was bad. I don't know, Alex. Was it anything particularly tactical? We understand we didn't have Matt Glazer there.
Yeah, it was just kind of looked a little disinterested, or not even that. I think it was just a hard day for everyone. Maybe the travel got involved, and it was hard for guys to really push fully. And mm-hmm. I mean, that Lexington team, we talked about it before this, like they were kind of electric going forward. They're hard to handle, and so even with a man down, like I was watching that game, and I was like, anytime their front three touched the ball, you can tell just the way that they play mm-hmm. that there's a little something to them that's
gonna come on. Like everybody's been disappointed with or surprised at their start, that they haven't won a whole bunch of games yet. I think they're starting to gel, though. We started to see that last weekend, right? That they're mm-hmm. and we did actually pretty well to keep them out of the net for 90 plus minutes, I guess.
Was it pretty windy there too, or?
Yeah, the weather was not great.
Yeah, because I noticed that in the last 15, 20 minutes too. I mean, like even like we had set like we had corner kicks, we had a bunch of corner kicks, and sometimes they would like not even stay in play.
Yeah.
And you know, a windy game against a team sitting in a very deep low block, down a man, mm-hmm. with capable players up front to transition. I think that's a real challenge. And
Well, and you look poised to even up, and it looked to me, and again, this is not tactical, but it looked to me like once we did go up a man, we kind of took our foot off the gas. We're like, okay, we got this now.
Yeah.
And we didn't have this now. And then you go up another guy because I don't know, that red card on a dive is really weird. Like he gets a yellow card for time wasting and then another yellow card for a dive and he's off. Like that's the worst way to get sent off.
Yeah. I know he got an earful. I bet. Like yeah, getting sent off from two cards that are generally, avoidable if you just
But then you still can like play for penalties, right? And play for a draw and get a point and then a penalties for a second point. But then Jake Krull gives up a free kick way down there and we'd like give up a free header. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah, it was tough. You know, one thing that I like about Chalaka's game is on set pieces, he puts his head on balls. Like he's actively going and attacking a lot of different crosses. And I think that was a moment where we felt him missing a bit because he had been taken off by that at that point. Yep. And the set piece goal. So. And then what do we say? Like a few episodes ago, corner set pieces, they can make or break a game. And
totally, yeah. In a game like that where it's 0-0 and it's just frustrating all around, like it's kind of lucky. It's kind of not great defending on the set piece, but it goes in and that's it. And it's okay because there's 9 more games in that competition.
Oh yeah,
right. We'll bounce back and we'll be all right there. Now let's turn to the bounce back game, which was this past Saturday, which I mean there was a good bit of difference. Chaney did not start. I think I did ask Matt, was that because he didn't play well Saturday, and Matt didn't say no. but so they had
he had mentioned that. I mean they've got 3 games.
Three games this week. He's
coming back
minutes.
From an injury.
He's coming back from that calf, and so they're kind of trying to manage him a little bit. Plus, there's games, like you said, Wednesday and then next Saturday. So it wasn't necessarily punitive, but we did see him in the second half. But it looked like, I don't know, was it a 3-5-1 or a 3-4-3? Basically, you had Derek Gebhardt up top, and then Nazim Bartman and Devin Boyce just kind of right there with him as kind of midfielders slash attackers. And then Stephen Payne and Wolfie Prentice on the wings. And Agustin Davila and Morris Acero both out with injuries. So that and Timmy Mell also didn't start or didn't play at all for some reason. But so it was Chalaka and Osmond and Kroll across the back. And Chalaka and Kroll both usually play on the left. But Chalaka stood up on the right. And I think he did okay. With the exception of that moment of giving up the penalty, but we'll get to that. But it was nice to see, after coming off that, you know, demoralizing loss on Saturday to a week later, to get a goal in the first minute, right?
Yeah, they came out electric.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I asked Matt, it was Chaney, I believe. We one of the post-game interviews, we asked, like, did you guys get a good, like, game talk, like, pregame chat? Like, what was it about the warm-up? I mean, because they came out flying the first 2 minutes. I mean, we got a goal right away. Mm-hmm. And at home, man, you love that.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You can't have a better start.
Yeah.
And I think we maintained, you know, a good game plan. I think we were sitting a bit deeper in that first half for a lot of it. We might have had a deeper line of confrontation, and it seemed like we were creating a lot through the transition, finding Derek and you know, releasing up the field, and so I felt it was a bit different than what we were generally accustomed to, but it was working. And unfortunately, you know, at the end of that half we gave up the pen, but
we were in firm control. I mean, the possession stat was like 60-40 in the first half, which is great to see. Just to talk about that goal for a minute, it was a little bit of, like, kind of counter-pressing that Jimmy Villalobos took the ball right off the foot of Evan Lee. And then it was like bang, 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 bang down the right-hand side. It was Villalobos got it to Boyce, one touch to Macias, one touch to Gebhardt, one touch to Payne, one touch to Bartman, who controlled it really nicely in the box. And I don't know how Wolfgang Prentice was so wide open. Like, they just lost track of him. And he made a really nice off-the-ball run just right down the middle, and Nate Schultz is trying to chase him down, but he's standing all by himself right at the penalty spot and hammers it in. 59 seconds. Here's your trivia for the day. That's the third fastest goal in Ford Madison history.
Wow.
After Chaney scored in 16 seconds last year against Tormenta. We lost that game 4-1. That was the one goal we got. And then back in 2019, Paolo Jr. got one in 44 seconds against Toronto. But there's your when we finally get around to having a Talk and Flock trivia night, write that one down. But like I said, then you worry, then are they going to sit back and give up a bunch of goals?
I mean, they did sit back a little bit more after that. But we were managing it, you know. It's not like it's not like we gave up too many goal scoring opportunities.
No, they had very few opportunities in that block.
So I mean, like, I think it's interesting to see the difference in, like, how a team will adjust after, you know, getting something like a goal. Because right, like the first minute, we were just on them, pressing high, and then we get that goal, and it's like, okay, we can be a little bit more comfortable. A lot of them have some possession, but then we win it. Really drive and
well, there
to
was
transition
a couple of
quickly.
Runs that were like to really drive. Like, we saw Aiden Macias with a couple of really silky smooth runs right up the central channel. Derek Gebhardt, he was playing that sort of number nine position, but he ended up on the wing down again, and he just blew right by Tyler Pollock on the right hand side. And
Derek was flying the first half
and got it solo, basically from our defensive third all the way up the right hand side past Pollock and into the box. And I thought he was going to try to shoot, but he stepped on it, slide over to Boyce, and Boyce flung it way over.
That would have been such a goal. That would have been awesome.
That would have been so good. So we were still creating opportunities, even though sitting back a little bit, still creating opportunities, making really, really good runs, really dangerous looking runs, mostly on the right hand side in that first half, or centrally, right centrally. Mm-hmm. A lot of good. So that sort of tight space, one touch passing that we saw last year was really nice to see again. And the possession was really purposeful. I didn't see a lot of lackadaisical across the back and back, you know.
Well, that's something that I was going to mention too. Is like it seemed like they were being more intentional, going forward, mm-hmm. Than in past games. You know, like looking to take guys on, mm-hmm. Push the pace and skip a few lines potentially with passes. You know, being a bit more risky, moving the ball forward. Longer distances, and mm-hmm. I think that was different, right? As you mentioned, you know, it seemed at the start of the season that we were trying to take 6, 7, 8, 9 passes to move the ball forward, and in this game, again, it was a bit more intentional and moving the ball forward quickly and taking less time, less passes to get there. Yeah. And so it worked. It worked, I think.
Yeah, it really did. Until, I guess, at the very end of the first half, is a clever little flick from Greenville, and while the ball's in the air, I think it was Lyon McKinnon who was the intended recipient of that flick. He kind of stopped in front of Michael Chalaka. Michael pushed him down in the box. That's a penalty every time. And Jamie Smith took it, and we got a penalty in the second half too, and both penalties. Smith and Chaney, we'll talk about that in a bit, but they were both just no-nonsense penalties, which was nice to see. Like, nobody tried to Panenka, nobody tried to stutter step. You recall, Brent Shipman, in the past two seasons, has faced two penalties against Greenville and saved them both. Earlier this season, that the guy, I don't remember who took it, but it was the run-up was just so slow and he's got nothing behind the ball, and this time Jamie Smith just like sprinted up to it and hammered it in, and there's nothing Byrne can do about it. And we go to the break 1-1, which is then you start feeling like, did we get that goal too early? Now we got to defend for another 45 minutes. But
I think the big feeling, I mean, personally for myself, was, you know, second game at home, the first game, it kind of went the same, mm-hmm. in a sense, right? Like, we were up, and then we gave up a goal right before the half, and it's like, it's almost like, oh no, not again.
Totally.
And you know, props to the guys for responding, and because, mm-hmm. Again, you can allow that to impact your game and bring you down, or you push through it. And they did.
And they did push through it. And Matt brought in Christian Chaney for Devin Boyce at halftime. Boyce did have a yellow card, so there's part of that. And he's, you know, he's such a hard worker and always trying to mix it up. And it's and you lose something when he has to be careful, right? So they basically moved Gebhardt to Boyce's spot and put Chaney up top. And the interesting thing about this, we've been a little bit critical of Matt the last two seasons on this program. For making mostly like-for-like substitutions and not using substitutions to change tactics. And not that this changed tactics exactly, but I did ask him about it after the match, and he said, yeah, we're at home, we're trying to win, we're going to make attacking substitutions. So it was definitely the idea was to put more attacking firepower on the field, which was great to hear. And you said they responded well to giving up that goal. I mean, Wolfgang Prentice had another really good opportunity early in the second half, hammered it right into the goalkeeper, but maybe could have played it across instead. But still, it was it was nice to see him on the front foot. But we'd give up a goal again, and then you're like, oh no, not again. This goal that we gave up early in the second half was pretty clearly just sort of goalkeeping error. Does that hurt your feelings as a former goalkeeper?
Yeah. I hate talking about goalkeeper errors. I just do. It's like it sucks. It's unfortunate. But they happen. Mistakes happen. And
Well, was it a bad decision, or did he just? I mean, you come up for it's a ball up in the air. Somebody's trying to head it. Burns comes out to try to punch it away.
And he committed to it.
Yeah.
When you commit to it, like you got to go. The worst thing you can do is get caught in no man's land, right?
Sure,
like
sure.
Get stuck in the middle and, you know, freeze or be caught in a position. If you're gonna go, if you're gonna move, if you're gonna make a play on the ball, you gotta just believe in yourself and commit to it. And he did, and
he didn't get it.
Yeah. And so.
And the ball falls to. Was it McKinnon who scored that? I don't remember who scored that. But
yeah, of course he wants that back.
Oh sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So now you're like, okay, we played great the first half. Now we're gonna lose. But literally 40 seconds after the restart, it's another push in the back. This time, Greenville against Derek, barely inside the box, like a step inside the box. Stephen Payne tries to slide. I don't know what Stephen. It was such a weird pass because it's right on top of the box. Stephen Payne's got the ball, and Derek is stepping in front of him with like three defenders around him.
Yeah.
And Payne's like, "Oh, I'll just pass it to you, 6 feet ahead of me, surrounded by defenders." It was a weird decision to make that pass, but it worked out because inexplicably one of those defenders just pushed Derek to the ground. Then we earned a penalty, and Chaney just walks up and hammers it and scores it and celebrates as if he just won the World Cup. I love it.
It felt like one of those moments where the ref kind of gave up a pen that for us and he wanted to give one back. Just it out. That, I mean, that's what it felt like to me.
Do you think the first penalty was soft?
Not necessarily soft, but, you know, I think it could have gone either way, potentially.
Yeah.
Maybe if the ref was a little farther from the play. And then the second one, you know.
Well,
it also could have gone both ways, right? Because, like, if you think about it, there's three defenders around Derek, so.
Derek's not going
to. Is he really going to, like, right? Is he really going to have possession of this ball? Does he have an opportunity on this?
Yeah.
And the contact is, again, I would say 50-50. Like, he could have gone either way. Yeah.
But because
he'd already called a pen for forward.
For basically the same
thing.
Yeah,
for a similar thing. And at home, too. Like, at least he's consistent with it.
Yep.
Right? So
yeah. I will say the game was pretty well officiated for the most part, I think. But so then it's 2-2. And then we start making the. So in other words, like, we go behind, but not for very long, which is nice to see. Chaney actually almost got another one shortly thereafter with a nice looking header that just grazed the outside of the post. That was rough. We did get away with one or two. We were talking before about Jamie Smith's long ball.
Yeah, what a pass.
from his own, like, from their defensive third, right? That was not even close to midfield. It was a long ball on a dime to Lyon McKinnon, and it's almost like our defenders got caught admiring that pass.
Yeah. It was, I mean, well, and also it's coming from so far away and it's hit so well that it kind of had like this outspin to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he hit it with his laces almost like inside of the foot, and those kind of balls, they kind of have some backspin to it. But this one, it kind of like curled wide.
Uh-huh.
Mid air,
and you and I were both down.
We had like the perfect angle,
and while the ball's in the air, you said, "Oh, what a ball!" Like, while it's still in the air, and somehow Lyon McKinnon gathered it and put it wide. Like, he was in behind one on one with Byrne Shipman. He could have put it anywhere, but he just pushed it wide. I don't know what, how or why, but we got away with that one.
I mean,
sure.
He probably got caught admiring it too a bit.
Probably. Yeah. Probably. But thankfully, it didn't go in. And then we bring on Ferdy Sosa for Payne in the 65th. He ejects just a lot of energy right away.
Yep.
Everything's coming through him the rest of the way. And then in the 77th, we replace Derek Gebhardt and Nizzy Bartman, who were those sort of the supporting attackers, with Sharif Jay making his first home appearance, his first league appearance for us, and Juan Galindres. And the rest of the way, everything is coming up through Sosa and Jay, right? Like, they just changed that game coming in. And to have that kind of offensive energy coming in off the bench is something we haven't had before,
mm-hmm.
which is really great to see. And this is like maybe the second or third time that we've seen Chaney and Galindres on the field at the same time, and it worked better this time than it has in the past.
Yeah,
like they, as you see in the goal, but on that winning goal in the stoppage time goal, all four guys that were involved in it were subs,
yeah,
which is really cool. Sharif Jay just pestered Tyler Pollock until he, I don't know who he was trying to pass to, but he passed it right to Ferdy Sosa.
Yeah,
and then Jay turns up and Sosa gets the ball to Jay. Jay, what I liked about his run is that he took it into the box rather than to the corner. You know, Stephen Payne would have taken it to the corner and tried to cross it because that's his game.
Mm-hmm.
Jay takes it straight into the box. He gets by a guy, plays it across. Chaney insists he got a touch on it. I don't think he did.
I think we've seen that Tag City video. You know, like I got a good look at it.
He didn't whiff it though. He intentionally left it.
If anything, it looks more like a leave. But also, I mean, maybe he got the slightest heel on it. You know, like,
yeah, I don't know. He went like he was gonna take a shot, but it was a bit behind him. And
it's a great play.
It was great because him standing there right in the middle of the box, he gets all the attention.
Yep.
Right, he's got two guys looking at him, and Hung Linders is on the back post waiting for it, kind of by himself. And whether he flicked it or left it, I mean, it was intentional. He didn't miss it, right? He wasn't trying to shoot it and whiff it. He meant to leave it for Juan Galindres, which shows you, and he talked about this in the postgame interview as well, how the two of them are really learning each other and getting to know each other and really learning to play together. Because you can see him as Jay's bringing the ball up. You can see Chaney's got his head on a swivel. He's looking around, and he knows exactly where Galindres is. So he leaves it, and Galindres wraps his right foot around it, and there's nothing. And the froze the goalkeeper. Like, he didn't even try for it.
Yeah, you can't really. That was a bang.
It was a hell of a finish and a hell of a celebration and very, very good mood in the forward club afterwards. Now, Sharif Jay, also we should mention, he almost got another one to seal it, right?
Yeah.
Granville's pushing forward, comes from a throw-in. Galindres gets a nice ball to him, and he's all by himself. And he probably could have had a whack at it from about 18 yards and decided to step on it and try to dribble around a defender and ended up putting it wide. But, yeah, that's okay. We'll take it.
I think as you mentioned, like, the chemistry, you can see, like, some of the guys on the front line really starting to mesh.
Starting to click, yeah.
Well, especially that line of substitutions that came in, right? Like, Sharif and Papo and, I mean, they had a relationship clearly too, you know, like when on that goal, that game, that winner, Sharif, he was pressing super well, and what I was really impressed by actually was how quickly he transitioned from making the challenge on the ball, noticing that, you know, the guy who was defending made a bad pass
mm-hmm.
to his teammate, and just immediately attacking forward and again pushing the pace in a way that you don't like that's straight from the training ground almost, you know, like the exercise that they'll do as a team, like
the transition
kind of games, like that's the stuff that you get in the training sessions. So that goal, I mean, I'm sure as a coach you're like,
that's a good one,
pretty proud of.
We should also mention that Sharif Jay and Christian Chaney played together for a year already, year before last in Fresno, and you can kind of see that as well. So a couple of stats we'll throw out there. Madison had 14 shots, 5 on target, 3 of them went in. 11 of those shots were inside the box, which is nice to see, getting closer in. Greenville had only 8 shots and only 2 on target, but they both went in. Madison had 53% of the possession at the end, more in the first half than in the second, and 83.5% passing accuracy, which we like to see. Wolfgang Prentice ended up with the highest FOTMOM rating at 8.7, which is very, very strong. Any other impressions? Anything else you want to mention about this match?
I think it was just really good for everyone involved, like the fans,
the
players, the staff, like everyone just involved in Madison and in the game here, and that follows along with forward. Like this was a good game.
Yeah,
and you know
there was some question, and I don't remember who on Twitter asked if this is the first stoppage time winner that we have scored, I think, since the Back to Breeze game in 2021 when Derek scored in the stoppage time and then the fans knocked over the ad board
Didn't Payne have one last year? Last
season? It was in the 90th minute. I don't know if it was stoppage time yet. Mm. That might have been. Oh, we should check that. Against Chattanooga.
Yeah.
I think that might have been 90th minute, not quite.
That's the last game I was. That's before the season. That was like the game that I've been to. I was.
Oh, you were at that
game?
Yeah,
I was at that game. Man. It was awesome. We were there with Madison College guys.
That was so cool. That was such a great one. But that certainly, if you want to say late winner, like that was definitely up there as well. But beating NCFC in our first game back at Breeze after the pandemic and stuff was pretty electric moment as well, which is immortalized in a canvas print in the Forward Club, which is fantastic. Up next, we play at Knoxville for a league match on Wednesday. Both of these times are weird. It's a 5:30 start in Knoxville, and then they'll head to Charlotte for the second round of the Jägermeister Cup, which is one of our two games that are out of our group. We'll have 8 games in our central group, and we'll have 2 games outside of our group, one at Charlotte and one will host Omaha later in the season. So the first of our out-of-group games is on Saturday, and that's at noon. It's a Saturday noon start, which is really weird, but it'll be fine. We are going to take a break, and we'll be right back right after this.
What's up, everybody? This is the star host of Out of the Box Podcast. My podcast is a platform for advocacy, raising awareness about the challenges faced by former inmates and promoting the idea that everybody deserves a second chance. It's my invitation to you to become a part of the movement towards positive change. And I'm excited to tell you it's the newest member of the 365 Media Network of podcasts. We'll have new episodes every other Thursday, so be sure to watch madison365.org/podcast for new episodes, or subscribe to Out of the Box Podcast on all your favorite podcast apps. I'm D-Star. Until next time, guys.
And we're back, and I could feel during the break there, I could feel you all tweeting at me that I made a mistake. Of course, in the Jägermeister Cup, there are 8 matches, not 10. There are 10 if you're lucky to get the semifinals and finals. There are 8 matches in group play. Sorry, everybody. Sorry, I said there were 10. The other thing, during the break, I did look, and Stephen Payne's goal against Chattanooga last year was not in stoppage time. It was in the 90th minute. It was just barely in the 90th minute. So this weekend's winner was our first stoppage time winner since the Back to Breeze game against North Carolina in 2021. Okay, with that all out of the way, we are very, very pleased to have from Charlotte, North Carolina, one of the what is your title? The founder, president?
My official titles would be secretary and treasurer. So
secretary and treasurer.
Our president, our fearless leader, David Thackham, was not able to connect, so I'm flying.
StreamYard was not being cooperative with David, but we're very happy to have the secretary treasurer of the Mecklenburg Reserves, which is the Charlotte Independence supporter group, Mike Umberger. Thanks for being with us. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Happy to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah. And thank you so much for making the time, because we're a supporter driven podcast. We love connecting with other supporters groups. Tell us a little bit about the sort of history of the Mecklenburg Reserves and your history specifically. Have you been with them since what, 2014 or whenever it started?
So the Mecklenburg Reserves started in 2021, and it coincides with the move by the Independents from Matthews, North Carolina, which is kind of a suburb, I guess you could say, moving their stadium from Matthews to essentially uptown Charlotte. We currently play in American Legion Memorial Stadium, which I'd like to say unbiased, but I'm probably biased. I'd say it's one of the best, if not the best, stadiums in USL One. Take nothing away from other clubs. This is not a diss. Where I just feel like we're super blessed to play where we are. It's I think the oldest stadium in Charlotte. It's been around since, probably 90 years ago is when it was first built. Legacy, a lot of lore. You know, our original pro team, the Carolina Lightning, played there 40 plus years ago. There was a Beach Boys concert there. We had the original Charlotte Hornets. You probably refer to the basketball team. Well, guess what? The first Charlotte Hornets were a football team in a league that preceded the NFL. They played there as well. So there's just all this history. stadium is like across the street from Uptown Charlotte. We have this amazing skyline, you know, view every game at night. It's a really special place to be. So with that change from the Sportsplex to the American Legion, we kind of came to be as a group. That also coincided with the pandemic. There was, you know, obviously a spell where, as far as I know, no fans were going to USL games at all. And in 2021, things kind of got back to normal. And my friend Trey Charles, our outgoing president, president, you know, emeritus, I guess, he started. I met him just kind of at a watch party. We hit it off. I am, I'd say, a day zero Independence fan. As I mentioned before we started recording, I went to Chapel Hill, UNC Chapel Hill, and watched those, the men's and women's teams, quite a bit. And one player that caught my eye was one Enzo Martinez. And if you're a USL fan, you may have heard of him. He's one of the more talented players. And just by coincidence, you know, I ended up moving to Charlotte right around the time he did to play for the Independents. Okay. So that caught my eye, and I was just excited to have, you know, a pro team in the area that embraced kind of the supporters culture side of things. We had a team that was called the Charlotte Eagles that was more of a faith-based team, you know, kind of, I'd say, exclusively family-friendly. So the Independents were kind of a bona fide attempt to be more cast in the mold of what you see from most soccer teams, and had at that time certainly ambitions of making it to top flight and all that. So I kind of jumped on that bandwagon pretty quick. I'd been watching a lot of, you know, Team USA and some European teams, but I just never really felt like I was I never could really commit to any European team because I just didn't have a connection. But for home city and my home state, with one of my favorite college players, you know, being there was kind of a no-brainer. So I jumped on board pretty quickly, but I was more of a casual fan, I guess, at the onset. You know, I fell off the bandwagon a little bit. Those who know Independence history know that our current coach, Mike Jeffries, was our inaugural coach. And he got, don't quote me on this, he got fired at some point for absolutely no good reasons, coach. And we hired this Irish manager named McGinnis, great last name. Awful manager. He had literally no experience as a head manager, and the team went from, like, you know, cusp of the playoffs to one win in 10 games. And I got frustrated. I was, cause I like Mike Jeffries. I think he's a good guy, a good person, good coach, and him getting kicked, you know, him getting relieved of his managerial duties was just ludicrous to me. And then the team, the way it performed. So, between those two things, I fell off the bandwagon a little bit, but heard that we were going to be moving from Matthews to Uptown Charlotte. And I live about 10 minutes away from the stadium where they're playing now. And I was like, you know what? I need to give them another chance. Cause I looked at the standings. I was like, oh, Mike Jeffries is back. Oh, we're not, you know, garbage. And I was like, I'm going to go just dive back in and be a fan and see what happens. And I'm really glad I did, because 2021 was a phenomenal year for us. I was kind of blown away taking, you know, 3 years off, for lack of a better term, to see how much USL had improved as a league. And the team played really impressive soccer, great touches, vision, passing. We had a few what were Charlotte FC loan players there, but just the quality top to bottom in 2021 was excellent. So, yeah, I ran into Trey. I had been kind of an ancillary member of the American Outlaws, so I knew a little bit about the supporter culture, but not a lot. And we just, you know, tried to grow it a little bit, meet people that were going to the games, start putting together watch parties, post-game events that evolved into doing tailgates again. And, you know, I created a website, we got some branding, and it's kind of taken off from there.
Speaking of branding, it's called Mecklenburg Reserves. And whenever I talk about Fort Madison, I take every opportunity to explain the whole flamingo thing. So I'm going to give you an opportunity. Why is it called Mecklenburg Reserves?
So Charlotte is located in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina. So that's kind of the Mecklenburg side of things. And Mecklenburg is a region in Germany, incidentally. I don't exactly know how it got the name, but I believe Mecklenburg might even predate Charlotte. And our writer here that we have in our crest, and the Independence has in their crest, is named Captain James Jack. He is a real person who has some historical significance in the area. He took the document known as the MEC Deck, the Mecklenburg Declaration of Independence, and rode on his horse from Mecklenburg to, I want to say it's either Rhode Island or Pennsylvania. And lore has it that Mecklenburg was the first part of the United States to declare its independence from Great Britain. And that happened in 1775. And that sort of just stuck in the city as lore. I mentioned American Legion Memorial Stadium. Literally across the street from that, there is this bronze statue of Captain Jack riding his horse. So, Mecklenburg deserves. My friend Sean came up with the name. I did not. I had some involvement with crafting the logo, but the reserves is our nickname, Mech Reserves, and we've kind of just gone with the colonial theme. Seems to fit with the history of the city. Well, the Hornets is a little bit been done, the Panthers, so you know.
Well, and we should say Hornets is also, for folks who don't know, is a historical reference as well, right? In the Civil War, Charlotte was known as the Hornet's Nest.
I believe it was the Revolutionary War, but I could be wrong. Okay. It was a Revolutionary War.
One of those long time ago places, wars. The Charlotte was colloquially called the Hornet's Nest, and so the Hornets became a mascot of sorts. Coming back a bit more contemporary here, 2021 was the last season of the championship. Did you know at that point that they were going to self-relegate, or was that a surprise in that?
I was informed of that at some point. I don't remember exactly when. So I certainly did not know that at the onset of my sort of resurgence of independence fandom. But I think at some point someone communicated to me that likely the team was going to be dropping down to USL1, which to me, honestly, it was a league I didn't know much about. Because when I took my sort of hiatus from fandom, there was no championship. There was no League One. It was just USL. It was just USL,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I was a little bit concerned at first. I didn't know what to expect about the quality in USL1, but very quickly those concerns were assuaged. And I've been really impressed with what I've seen overall from USL1. I don't think it's much of a drop down from championship, at least for the better teams. I don't want to disparage some teams, but there's maybe one or two teams that seem to finish in the bottom a lot. They can be maybe hard to watch, but if you're just looking at the playoff teams, I really believe any of the USL top six, USL one top six, could easily fit in in the championship division.
There's a pretty big gap between like Louisville and Fuego. Let's just say that.
Right. Yes, exactly.
The gap between like Omaha and, I don't know, Las Vegas is somewhat.
Right, exactly. Right? So I was initially a little concerned, but I'm sort of like club before league, so I was not going to just jump ship unless it was really rough to watch, which it's not. Every week you look at the highlights, you see absolute banger goals in this league. So it's been really fun.
It's good quality. As you sort of alluded to, it's gotten better. Like the USL top to bottom, the quality has just improved.
I was blown away in 2021 looking back, and you see it a little bit in the Open Cup too. We've had several teams make deep runs. USL1, you got to give Omaha a lot of credit for what they did, I think, 2 years ago
there,
and showed that gap has shrunk quite a bit. So
for sure. Now part of the impetus for that self-relegation was the arrival of Charlotte FC in MLS, right? Were you ever tempted to become a Charlotte FC fan, or were you committed to the?
I consider myself a fan of both teams. And in fact, for I think it was the year 2022, we talked a little about this pre-pod, but there used to be a sort of an alliance between USL and MLS. And in Charlotte, for another year, that was the case. In 2022, we had, I want to say, three or four lone players that would kind of go back and forth between the teams. And honestly, it was really exciting as a fan to see someone, the name I'm thinking in particular, Quinn McNeil, just play lights out for USL in the USL League One, and then get called up, get his first start, get his first assist, get his first goal. That was just tremendous as a fan to have both teams kind of enmeshed. But alas, it was only for one season. And then we got what is actually a third pro team in Charlotte called Crown Legacy FC that incidentally plays in Matthews, where the Independents used to play. And the relationship between Charlotte FC and the Independents is, I'd say, if anything, adversarial once again. So As I was telling you before, like my opinion of MLS has changed so dramatically in the past 3 years. You know, yeah. I think they're engaging in what I call soccer imperialism, where they're, you know, kind of invading third division markets and trying to take over. I mean, yeah, I think it's an adversarial relationship. I think they're trying to outcompete USL. Mm-hmm. And what they've done with the Open Cup is just really grinds my gear. I'm my first pro soccer game that I ever went to was an Open Cup game, and it was in Charleston. Yep. Charleston Battery Open Cup against FC Dallas. I just happened to be like vacationing in Charleston, and I saw there was a game, and I was like, let's go to this. Why not? You know? They had an amazing atmosphere in Charleston back then. And maybe still, I don't know. I think
they still do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great. Yeah, but certainly it was a Black Bob Stadium, and I was just blown away. Like, this is happening in South Carolina. What, you know, this like very European style support culture. So I was definitely kind of hooked again at that point. And really, attached to USL. I think FC Dallas won the game 2-1, but it was like a very close game, and
yeah,
you know, reinforced my belief that there's not this huge gap between the two leagues.
Right. Well, one of the for my birthday in 2018, the semifinal in Minnesota was Minnesota hosting Portland in the USL the US Open Cup semifinal.
Wow.
So, and it was obviously two MLS teams, but they wanted it, you know. They
took Minnesota. Okay, USL. Yeah, they're both.
USL. This is Minnesota United 2018, so it was like their third season in MLS. Maybe I think they came up in 2016, 15, something like that. Anyway, they were MLS at that point, and so it was. But both of those teams really wanted that match, and a bunch of people came from Portland to see it. To see MLS just no longer care about that tournament is just really frustrating. So what has the independents been able to do to stay alive in an MLS market that like San Diego Loyal couldn't do, or that Austin Bold couldn't do?
Yeah, so I don't really have any inside information on that. I will tell you my speculation. I believe that the independents sold its championship license to a team, maybe Detroit City, even, I don't know. And got a bunch of money for that. And I think they're kind of using a lot of that money to fund things now.
That is wild. I never knew that.
I mean, you can quote me on that, but like caveat, I don't know that that's true, but that's my belief and understanding of that.
I mean, do you know that they sold the license or not? Or that you're just,
if I recall correctly, I believe someone from the front office did say they were selling the license, but I'm reluctant to make that claim.
Unconfirmed reports.
I'm sorry.
We have unconfirmed reports that.
Mostly speculation, but I know there was an attempt to sell it, and USL interceded at some point. So, I mean, I'd be surprised if he couldn't sell it. So,
that makes sense.
Are relying a bit on money from that deal, but I don't know for sure.
There's some idea that there was like an influx of cash that they're kind of living on for a few years.
I believe so. Yeah. But I don't know for sure. So I think they're trying to find their way and see if they can survive. And they got the stadium deal and the timing of it. I don't know if, you know, how much USL One people follow the MLS bid, but Tepper came out of nowhere. Nobody saw that coming.
Yeah.
The second bid for MLS. We had a local group, Marcus and Bruno Smith, who are NASCAR people. They put forth a bid and were trying to turn the Legion into an MLS stadium. That bid failed. Mm-hmm. Mainly for political reasons, I would say. But ultimately, despite that bid failing, the county did what I think is a good thing and invested in American Legion World Stadium and renovated it to make it make the width sufficient to accommodate soccer. And now we've got lacrosse, we've got rugby, we have all these tournaments that play there, lacrosse, soccer, rugby, American football. It's a government-owned public facility that gets a lot of use, and I'm really pleased with the result. But Tepper definitely was a second MLS bid that came out of nowhere. And by the time I think that became a thing, the independents were already kind of wed to leasing the stadium that they're at for. I want to say it's a 10-year lease, so they kind of were in it, you know.
Yeah,
could have shut down, but whoever's in charge decided to try to make the most of it and I guess do what Miami's doing. The Miami FC,
yeah.
I think is our closest corollary in terms of
that's a good one. Yeah.
the size of the city. Like, obviously, you know, you've got a bunch of teams in LA, New York, but those cities population wise are totally different. But yeah, yeah, we're kind of, I'd say our sister team in a way would be the Miami FC, and they're in a similar boat. And, you know, I'd say what the front office has done and has, at our encouragement, to be honest, is kind of embraced the family side of things. I'm more the hardcore supporter, but the reality is Charlotte FC, you know, has some of the most expensive tickets in MLS. And I have a lot of friends. I mean, a lot of people in our group, honestly, are just like, look, I love soccer. I love local soccer. I want to go to the games, but I can't afford it. You know, it's just too much. Whereas Independence, I made a post on Twitter where I did, you know, kind of a, I don't want to call it a study, but I did some real research. It was like an effort post. And priced out each team in Charlotte on a per game basis, and Independence was like far and away the most affordable. And we're also one of the few teams that consistently in Charlotte makes the playoffs, you know. So we've won playoff games. We made it to a final. So
yeah.
It's really hard to argue, I think, with the quality on the field. We've been really fortunate as fans to get to see the soccer we've been able to see.
Yeah. So what's that like, winning a playoff game?
I mean, it was exhilarating. I still remember vividly. This is 2021. I think it was the first playoff game we'd ever won. We were playing Memphis 901 in a very cold November night, in which I kept warm with a good amount of alcohol. And we had Christian Fuchs playing for us, someone I knew from Leicester. I mean, I was totally dialed into Leicester's 2016 title run. I mean, it's like the ultimate underdog story.
Oh yeah.
The UCL, sure. There's no such thing as, like, you know, getting hot at the end of the season. If you want to win the table, you got to be good the whole season. And Leicester did that. And so I loved their style of play. I really like Christian Fuchs, and was just still kind of like, I can't believe he's in my city playing for the Independents. Like, if you told me that 5 years ago, I'd be like, you've lost your mind. There's no way. So he came and played, and he scored a goal off a corner kick to put us up 3-1 in the corner. And I was in the front row, and he came by, and I stuck my hand out to give him a high five, and he high-fived my hand, and the lights were flat. I mean, yeah, it was amazing. I mean, there's just nothing like playoff soccer and the exhilaration of getting that win. And I hope you all, your fan base gets to experience that, because you all certainly deserve it. I mean, I think you're probably the most boisterous, vibrant, you know, supporters group in USL One. So hopefully.
Yeah, it's a noisy place.
I don't want you to win a game on Saturday, but later on when you're not playing us.
Yeah, we'll find some points elsewhere. you made the final last season. You're sitting in third right now on the table. How do you feel this season has started?
All in all, I think it's gone very well. You know, I think part of what tends to happen with teams, especially minor league teams, is when you have a really good year, it's hard to hold on to your best players. So Avian Flanagan, our excellent left back, who could have been, maybe should have been playing winger. He's up in championship now. I'm trying to think who else. I think Dan Kelly may have just retired, so we lost him. But I want to say there's I'm blanking out now, but there's someone else we lost to championship. So Corey Bennett, that's right. Corey Bennett went to Las Vegas Lights.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And so we've been trying to kind of fill those voids. We have a new player left back named Sorensen, who I think is very talented. I think he's a little raw. You know, he makes some mistakes sometimes, but I feel like the talent is there. So he's been a pretty good replacement. And then Carlton Belmar, I think, who is kind of the Corey Bennett replacement. So I feel like both those guys are a little bit like for like. Mike Jeffries found a similar player to replace the departing player, but you know, those are still kind of third division guys, so I don't view them as clear upgrades. But I've been pleased with what I've seen for them so far. We've been facing a lot of injuries too. Gabby Oberton was out for a few games.
Yep.
I'd like to think he's one of the bigger names in USL1, given his pedigree. I mean, he played for Man U. He played for Newcastle. I mean, guy, you know, he's cream of the crop, talent wise. So getting him back has helped a lot. Miguel Ibarra, if you're a loon, you know who that is.
And, I was gonna ask. He's been out, right?
He suffered a pretty serious injury, I understand. I don't know the full details, but during the off season, you know, he posted on Instagram something to the effect of like, "Thank goodness my career's, you know, I'm this is not a quote, like, my career's not over. Like, it was almost really, really bad." So we're anxiously awaiting his return. But yeah, just given Shalom Duty's out, we've had a few injury. The injury bug kind of bit us early. So, there's a term roster. So all in all, I mean, I think I'm pretty pleased. I don't know if we have quite the marquee roster as last year, but I think it's definitely playoff worthy, and especially with the playoffs being 8 teams now. So I have no complaints. We're doing really well as far as I'm concerned, and I'm very optimistic about some of the new players, and I think we're starting to really hit our groove.
Well, you're unbeaten in the last 4, it looks like. So that's
We've done well. Some of those were close, like in the Open Cup. We I think 0-0 was the finish against South Carolina Heat United. Mm-hmm. We won that on penalties. Yep. Rhode Island, that was a banger of a game. Oh my gosh, 4-4 penalties. Yeah. You know, narrowly got the win. That was wild by anybody's standard. So we've done just enough. Omaha, we played them 0-0. Our MVP is almost undoubtedly Austin Pack. He's
well, I was going to ask you about him as we're coming down Saturday for the second round of the Jägermeister Cup. I was going to say, you know, is there any way somebody could slip something like into his gloves to numb his fingers? any way we could?
Yeah. Shots of Jäger to put him out.
Is it possible to score on? I don't know.
Yeah, he's really talented. I mean, he's a player that, in my opinion, belongs in championship and came from championship. I don't know why he couldn't get minutes for Hartford, but you know, he didn't for whatever reason. And I think our front office is like, hey, you know, you went to school in Charlotte, you're from the South, you're from Atlanta. Why don't you come closer to home? You'll get all the minutes you want. And I don't know, but I expect he's getting paid. He's getting compensated well for what he does. So it's been a huge blessing for us to have one of the best, if not the best goalkeepers in the league.
I remember when Charlotte was in Madison last season, and it was the first time I'd seen him in person. And I literally tweeted, Austin Pack, stop it. we just could not get anything back. Speaking of next Saturday's match, it is the Jägermeister Cup. What is your opinion as a fan of the Jägermeister Cup? Did you enjoy that first weekend, and do you like the whole idea of it?
I've been a little bit of a skeptic of in-season tournaments in general. But with USL1, I think the decision was driven in large part by trying to balance the schedule, which I kind of appreciate the creativity. I mean, MLS has done their own in-season tournament that's a lot of people, including myself, have been critical of. But I'll be 100% honest, once they announced the sponsor as being Jägermeister, my opinion of it shot way up. No pun intended. I think that's just a fantastic, really fun partnership. So given, you know, the kind of the difficulty in balancing a schedule with USL1. I'm in favor of it. You know, I think there was a lot of goals maybe, but I mean, I think there were like three, four games that went to extra time. Or extra time went to penalties.
Yep. Four of the 6 games went to penalties.
Right. Exactly. So I will confess I am a penalty wimp. I freaking hate watching. I get nervous for the players. So I'm not a huge fan of that, but you know, if anything, it's more experience and more practice for the players. So I can see why they did that. It's probably good to practice penalties. You know, Charlotte, we last year in the playoffs were in penalties against Omaha and in the final penalties. Always a good thing to practice.
And I suppose you're hoping to go to penalties Tuesday night as you go to Atlanta to play Man United in the Open Cup. That's a big one for you. How are you feeling about that?
I feel like we're playing with house money, you know. No one expects us to win. Any USL1 team, I don't think most would expect to win in that scenario, especially against a team. I think Atlanta's actually a very good team, and they have some high profile players. So, you know, I unfortunately myself cannot make it. As I mentioned, my wife's expecting. She's doing 3 weeks, and baby one came early, so I'm on call. I just can't be 4 hours away. So I will not be there, but I think there's going to be a good contingency of traveling support for the Independents, including some of the reserves. And, you know, we're just going to support our team. Some at the game, myself from home, but I think you got to cheer them on and believe and hope, because the magic of the Cup is anything can happen. And we've done it before. You know, about 9 years ago, the Independents played the New England Revolution in New England and got the upset 1-0 win to advance. We then played Chicago Fire and were winning 1-0 until Chicago did what a lot of MLS teams have done, and that's bring on the big guns once they realized, you know, maybe we can't beat USL teams with our reserves. Maybe they're actually pretty decent, so let's bring on the big guns. And they brought on some very good athletes and scored 2 goals, and that was that. So it just depends. I mean, you know, Omaha, we mentioned they had a great run, obviously, a couple of seasons ago.
Yep.
Why not us? You know, it's certainly – you know, it's a game to be played. I think it's one we can win, but it'll be a tough one. I've watched a few MLS versus League One contests, and when the MLS teams take it seriously, right, it's really tough.
Yeah. We had Minnesota a couple of the year before last, and it was a miserable day. It was about 40 degrees and raining, and we lost 2-0, and it was actually a pretty fun game, honestly. It was cool.
I mean, that's not a bad scoreline. The last game I saw, I want to say it was Charlotte FC versus Tormenta in the Open Cup, and it was 4-1 final. Tormenta got more of a consolation goal. Really, honestly, an amazing goal. It was super well struck, but
yeah.
Charlotte FC, by and large, played probably it's like A-minus team. There is ultimately between the first and third, there's a bit of a talent gap, but yeah. That doesn't mean we can't win, so. You know, kind of hope for the best.
Last question, big question. What do you love about being a part of Mecklenburg Reserves? Why are you so passionate about this supporters group, and what do you love about it?
I mean, they're just my friends. You know, it's people that I hang out with, that we have a shared love of a team. You know, Charlotte FC, their branding, if you follow that at all, has been it's a party, and it's big and it's loud and it's boisterous, but. I feel like I don't get to know people that well, but as Mech Reserves, you know, we're a much smaller group. I think we're maybe 40 total, if the entire group, and you just get to know people better. And it's just so much fun hanging out with the guys and a few girls, grilling meats, drinking beer. The weather's been immaculate so far, you know, it's just a good time. And, it's always nice to feel like you can very easily afford everything and sit close to the players. Like if I wanted, you know, right, that level of experience for Charlotte FC or MLS, you're just paying so much. And it's just really about the people and the connections that I've been able to build over the few years.
That's what this league is all about, is they're creating the community, right? And the connections with the friends and the fans and the players and everybody. So Mike Umberger, I really, really appreciate your time today. And maybe we'll, if any folks from Madison are heading to Charlotte next weekend or later in the season, we'll definitely connect.
Yeah, send out the call. We have had the privilege in the past of hosting Madison fans. Kind of the one that really sticks out in my mind was 2 years ago, we had a Ukrainian player on our team and pregame put on a very nice display with some of the Madison fans who just happened to be there. I think they were a couple of people going to school or going to college at Davidson and just like, oh, Ford Madison playing, let's go on out. So we put together a nice kind of smoke display. We had yellow and blue smoke and sidewalk chalk art. And they were all super friendly, you know, very much fit the stereotypes that I've heard about people from Wisconsin just being super polite and friendly. And we are very much kind of an open supporters group. If you're coming to Charlotte, if you're in Charlotte for a game, come to our tailgate. We love to have away support. We've got lots of beer, lots of food. We're happy to share.
And you got that beautiful old historic stadium just like ours. So we know.
Yeah, absolutely. Like
all right, Mike Umberger, appreciate it. Have a great night.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
All right, let's go around the league now. Rather than talk through all the Jägermeister Cup matches, which are already a week and a half ago now, let's just talk through the standings of the tournament. Again, there are three groups. And in the Eastern group, Charlotte and Richmond are tied in first place with 2 points. Tormenta and Greenville each have 1. In the Western group, Omaha and Fuego have 2 points. Northern Colorado and Spokane each have 1. That's because all 4 of those matches ended in draws. And Charlotte, Richmond, Omaha, and Fuego all won the penalty shootouts to get that extra point. In the Western group, Omaha is technically speaking in first place because the first tiebreaker is not goal differential, but goals scored. So it's not just the most goals get in that fourth place in the semifinals. It is actually the first tiebreaker as well, which I think we forgot to mention earlier in the show. All of those, the Spokane, Fuego, Triumph, Kickers, Tormenta and Charlie and Independence matches all ended in 1-1 draws. Omaha and Northern Colorado were 2-2. So Omaha scored more. Northern Colorado scored two also, but only has 1 point. In our group, Knoxville and Lexington both won their matches 1-0. Lexington over us, Knoxville over Chattanooga. So as a result of that, the Central group has Knoxville and Lexington tied at top of the group with 3 points, Madison and Chattanooga with zero. But with plenty of games left in that competition, you know, we could be back on top of the group at the end of this weekend. We'd be fine. There will be 7 more matches in group play, as we mentioned, and we could still win that group pretty easily. Now let's look around this past weekend of USL League One games. Richmond and Knoxville on Friday played to a 1-1 draw at City Stadium in Richmond. Kempis Tequila opened the scoring on the half-hour mark, a very classy side volley finish. With Richmond pushing for an equalizer, Kingsford Ajay actually had a chance to put the game to bed for Knoxville. He was kind of one-on-one with the keeper, had a kind of a counterattack, and Ryan Shello, the keeper for Richmond, made a really nice big save. And Richmond took that possession all the way down the left side, and Joao Guimarães put a beautiful cross in, and Adrian Bilhart got ahead to it to save that point for Richmond. Over in Fresno, Charlotte comes to town and gets a 3-1 win. Robert Coronado for Fuego converted a penalty in the 10th minute, but that's all they would get. Juan Carlos Obregon equalized with a banger to the top of the 18-yard box shortly before halftime. And then he earned a penalty and then converted it for the brace in the second half. And then with Fuego pushing for an equalizer, Luis Alvarez scored on a counter to seal the deal. And on Saturday, the only other game besides ours was Omaha, a 4-2 win over Tormenta at Warner Park. Omaha came out flying. They got goals from Norte Norte in the 9th minute and Pedro de la Bella just 3 minutes later. That Norte goal, if that's not goal of the week, I don't know what will be. He scored that from about 40 yards, a one-hopper. It was just quite incredible. The de la Bella goal in the 12th minute was just a scramble after Tormenta couldn't clear a corner. Tormenta did get one back, first half stoppage time, and Sebastian Vivas' header from a corner. But then Joe Gallardo got that one back in the 70th minute. Very weird-looking ball. Gallardo was kind of carrying toward the touchline, toward the byline, rather, and tried to just basically cut it back, and it went across the goal in the six-yard box and just had a lot of spin on it. And it was like a cue ball with a lot of English on it. It just hit the grass and turned and rolled into the goal. Very strange-looking goal. Michelle Rodriguez got Omaha's fourth with a really strong left-footed effort from the corner of the box into the upper corner of the goal. And then Tormenta did get one consolation goal from Pedro Fonseca in the 84th, but it was too far gone by then. So after all that, Greenville technically remains on top of the table with 13 points, but they've played 7 matches. Madison has 9 points, but has only played 5 matches. So we're 4 points out of first with 2 games in hand. In between us, there's 4 teams with 10 points, all of them with a different number of games played. So if you look at points per match, which is a better measure, Madison is actually in 5th at 1.8. And Greenville, despite being on top of the table, technically, they're only one spot ahead of us in points per match at 1.86. So there's a lot of room to claw our way up the table. And that brings us to stoppage time. What do you got, Alex?
Yeah, so I was at the game. Well, yeah, obviously, we were at the game on Saturday, those of you listeners that were also there and hit the concession stand around the 30th minute may realize that or may understand the way I was feeling. So I get a cheeseburger, uh-huh. And I need my condiments, right? You know, I gotta have ketchup. Like that's a non-negotiable for me. Ketchup right there. I need it. And I'm looking. I can't find it on one end, on the north end. I go to the south, and Nope, no luck. Go to the forward club. No, no luck.
No ketchup at the forward club either?
No ketchup at the forward. I went to the forward club and I was asking around. 10 minutes. 10 minutes, and I'm like, okay. Got to just hang out in due time. Luckily, 43rd minute. I go and I check on the north stand, and the ketchup is back. Ketchup is back. So for a brief second,
43rd minute.
So for a brief second, actually not a brief second, for 13 minutes, you guys, I think the whole stadium might have been looking for ketchup and just couldn't find it. Hopefully this doesn't happen again. But props to the crew for managing to restock.
I wonder if they had to like go run to Costco or something and get some more ketchup.
I wonder how many people like may have asked, you know, or just like, because that was, I went on a mission. I had a mission, and I got the ketchup. The cheeseburger was not as warm as it gotten originally by the time I had it, but, you know, it tasted good, so.
All right, good enough. And we, speaking of tasting good, we did try the tamales.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, is that it's gonna be on XGT, right?
Yeah, we got a little video, so
a little tamale sampler.
Yeah, so we'll post that as well.
My established time is a player I want you all to take a look at. You might remember Nick Markanich from he donned a Mingo's jersey for one game back in 2019. He was he would have been 19 or so, and played for the Green Bay Voyagers. If you remember that team, that was our one year in USL League Two. And he played for Madison in a friendly. I don't remember which friendly, but he played for Madison in a friendly. So he does have that Madison connection. But he is he's now playing with Charleston Battery in USL Championship. Last season, he appeared in 33 matches and scored 11 goals, which is a really decent season for a striker. This year, 10 matches. He already has 12 goals. He scored 4 in the 6-0 rout of Las Vegas last weekend. And then this past Saturday, he scored the only goal in a 1-0 win over Hartford. And he made number 1 on SportsCenter Top 10. Okay, because it was a wild bicycle kick goal. Now, the USL Championship record for most goals, Cam Lancaster, back in 2018 for Lou City, scored 26. Markanich is almost halfway there in 10 games. He's on pace to score 40, but he's not going to score 40 because he's not going to have a lot more 4-goal games. But even without that, he'd be on pace to score almost 30. So keep an eye on Nick Markanich. That's all we have for you today. Have a wonderful week. We'll have 2 games to talk about next week, game day Wednesday, game day Saturday. Alex, thanks a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
We'll see you soon.